contrary to popular wishes, we haven't all given up our day jobs to watch the World Cup all day, although apparently Andrew Gregory has.
Where is he?
Here as yet, so you have to do with the three of us. I am Paul Hudson.
I am Graham Morrison.
And I'm Mike Saunders.
And this tub of lard is Andrew Gregory. Perhaps he will arrive shortly. We won't know until he does. In this podcast, what is it, episode 11? I lose track.
Yeah, I think it's 11.
We're flying through them. Mm. In this podcast, we are talking Isman Driver, the very first major modern distro to bite the bullet.
Yeah.
While Google releases new command line tools, our open ballot results come in. Are you more interested in freedom or functionality with Linux? We report back on our You Dare Us to Write Haiku and Limericks. And of course, there's our wonderful hot seat section. Graham's really worried about the Limerick section. And our Discovery of the Fortnight. So, listen on. Don't forget our awesome subscriptions offer for Linux Format Magazine. You can go to tuxradar.com/subscribe and buy us all more beer to watch the World Cup with.
Please. Right, let's get into the news then. One of the biggest stories in the last couple of weeks is that Google has introduced a command line tool for Linux. You can use Google from the shell prompt now. This is... it's kind of what you'd expect from a tool. You type in Google and then one of their services. So Google blogger post, --blog, title, tags, and so forth. Or you can add an event to the calendar using Google space calendar, or even edit documents in Vim.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Google space doc space edit, title, shopping list, --editor, Vim. So
what happens? Do you get the whole ODT XML or do you get a converted version?
I don't know. I mean, presumably you've just...
it's converted, isn't it?
Well, I don't know if it's...
OTD is a zip file full of XML, isn't it? So it's really a nasty thing to want to edit.
That's true.
Well, if you create... It looks like you're creating a new one here, perhaps. So then, you know, you'll type it in text in Vim and it will upload it and then you format it later.
Yeah.
But I think it's pretty cool.
It's very nice. I saw you using Python, isn't it?
Is it?
Yeah, it's Python. Yeah, I did install it briefly on Ubuntu.
Wow, Python's amazing.
You love Python, Paul, isn't it?
It uses one of the unsupported Python Google modules in terms of Ubuntu,
I thought it was using libferrus. I mean, I hadn't looked into it at all.
No,
my guess was libferrus.
Yeah, no, it's using whatever it's called, Python G...
Oh.
Can't remember.
Which has now got a rather big backer.
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, that is developed within Google.
I
was interested to see where it come from, because they're only going to support commands within this Google command line that's already in the Python module.
This has got nothing to do with that program that existed, which allowed you to mount your Mail
Google
as a file
FS,
system. Yeah, because I'm sure Google weren't too happy about that, because it means you could just put a load of MP3 files up on you.
Which, of course, we weren't doing anyway by mailing ourselves.
But there's no search, is there, and there's no mail. Which are probably two of the biggest features that I'd want from a Google command.
Is that because it'd be dead easy to spam?
You can't just do Google search?
No.
Oh.
Well, presumably from the mail side, you'd be able to set up a bash script.
I don't know.
Maps, restaurants near me.
That would be great.
Yeah, bash can do location finding.
Yeah, yeah.
Feature bloat.
Where
are you? Bash 4, perhaps. You can get that one in, lads.
That'd be nice. You could have like a random cookie that changes your location every day to see what's around.
Yeah.
You know? Moving on, Ubuntu is going to replace FSpot, photo management tool, with Shotwell in the next release. This is following what Fedora have done as well. So what do we think of that?
I've still not used it, but I spoke to a reader on the telephone the other day who's an Adobe Lightroom user.
Oh.
And he just installed Shotwell to see what it was like. And he was incredibly impressed. He said he had thousands of photos in his collection, which took ages in Digicam on his modest PC to import. But in Shotwell, it did it like many multiples of photos per second. And you couldn't do any editing with it, he said, or maybe very minimal editing. But in terms of a photo manager application, he said it was very good.
Right. I mean, I've only looked at the screenshots of it. It looks quite bare in comparison to FSpot. So I'm in two minds about it. On one hand, I did use FSpot quite extensively recently, managing...
I really like it. We said it last episode, didn't we? All really quite like it.
I've had quite a few crashes.
People saying, it crashes quite a lot.
Yeah.
I thought it was quite mature. I know it's like 0.7 now or something, so... It
must be mature.
Crashes.
That's
relatively mature, compared to Inkscape.
Yeah, well, that's it. I mean, maybe they should concentrate on fixing those bugs and having a really good quality photo, but then just changing it every time.
But it's got tons of functionality, I think. You know, we always kind of presume it's the equivalent to iPhoto, red eye removal and stuff like that. Nice colour balancing, which that's all gone.
Hooray. The name of progress.
Yeah. And finally, what's the deal with Mandriva? Graham and I have been talking about this for the last
month.
Yeah, really, because Graham's been looking to get it in for review, and I've been looking to get it on the LXF cover disc. So, you know, Mandriva 2010.1 should have been here a week, 2 weeks ago now. It hasn't arrived. The mailing list has gone dead. Graham's not been able to get any contact with his regular press contacts there. And there's been an open letter to the from the community to Mandriva, you know, basically saying, hell, where are you? What's going on?
Well, there are people that pay for support. You know,
of course, yeah, people who bought the box sets.
And, exactly.
Yeah, if they want to phone them. And so
they've not heard anything either.
The most recent thing I've heard is there's been some investors found. Have you heard this?
No,
this came in yesterday. It appeared on some random blog somewhere. So, you know,
it must be true.
I'm not sure how true it is yet, but it apparently had a quote from the current director of Mandriva saying, today the company found investors who decided to invest in the company in order to give balance to the organisation and to find a good economic model. But it's, you know, it's still like, what's going on?
And the language is always, you know, avoiding the obvious, that they're just not making any money.
No.
And their business plan isn't working.
They're not quite sure how to make any money.
Negative growth and stuff like that. Well, like Paul said earlier, you know, this could be a big major distro going down.
Is it number 7 or something in the top 10 at DistroWatch?
Yeah, it might be number 5 or something.
It's still an incredibly popular distribution.
And it is a good distro. It's good for newbies. It'd be sad to see...
One of the few KD-based distributions, I mean.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true.
So can we now say Mandriva is dead, Tux Radar confirms it, or is that a bit premature?
Or maybe we'd get some response then. Yeah, Mandriva's dead.
We'll get some comments, you mean? Yeah, Mandriva sucked all along too. We hated it from the very beginning.
Maybe we should buy it.
Yeah, I've got £15.
Great, we'll all chip in.
It's now time for You Dare Us, by which I mean You Dare the Three of Us, not Andrew at all, the wuss. He's not here, still.
Even if he was here, he wouldn't have done this.
No, he wouldn't have done it, you're absolutely right. Our challenge 2 weeks ago was to come up with an original limerick or haiku regarding free software or related stuff. Well, anything really. I'm quite open. Graham's looking terrified, so how about we go for the haiku first. Mike, what have you got?
I've got a lovely haiku. Just listen to this. Slack wear boots no more. Grub has been overwritten. Autumn leaves falling.
That's beautiful.
It brings a tear to my eye.
Yeah. Okay.
Haiku. ls-l. catdevrandompipegrep/. Toe t touch tick time.
What happens if you enter that?
Yeah.
Readers, perhaps you shouldn't enter that ideally.
Discovery of the week. What happens when you enter that into your list command? Just don't do it as root or blame us. Let me see. On mine, I've got 3. They get progressively more rubbish. Rebuilding kernel. Lots of text is scrolling by. I fathom nothing. Die pulse audio. You steaming pile of horse. Die, 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 die. And the last one doesn't quite fit the meter, but I'm being creative. Pink pony is Tron with ponies. Pink ones, naturally. Mike Saunders is funny. It's close enough. That's the haiku. Mike, let's go into limericks now.
Limericks.
Let's give us your limerick, please.
There was an old desktop from Sun, looked pretty and supposed to be fun, but looking glass failed and nobody wailed because Compiz and Beryl were done.
Wow! That's brilliant. Pretty good.
That's really, really good.
That's impressive. Graham, do you have
I haven't got one, but I will take... I tried, but they were all cheesy and I couldn't avoid writing about Stormin.
He's the man of your dreams.
But I did write a song once about Stormin and I can't find the lyrics for it, but it was called Stormin Wasn't Stalling, which was a recreation of an old 1930s protest song about Stalin wasn't stalling. But I can't remember what the lyrics were. I tried to find it. It wasn't in my Gmail. So
do you see a lot of similarities between Stalin and Stalin?
Well, I think actually the 30s song was thanking Stalin for all of his good work in Russia. It was an American song, I think, at the time.
Well, before you find everybody the lyrics knew. Before this goes live tomorrow, in fact, listeners.
Yeah, okay.
Then please post them and we'll let you off.
Stalin wasn't stalling.
Right. Mine is, there was a man from Waterloo who tried to install Gen 2. He set it compiling and sat back smiling, then 50 years later died from old age after a wasted life watching tech scroll by on his screen.
Yes. I think there's a moral in that.
There is. Actually, I do have here a copy of LXF48, which is our Christmas 2002 issue, I think, or 2003. That was old. 2003 issue. In which we published some more limericks, and one of mine has come true from 7 years ago or so, whenever it was. It was this that I wrote, and it has come true. There was a small company called SCO that wanted our Linux to go. They sued all through the night without proving their right, and soon they'll have no more dough.
Hey, and yeah. That after 7 long, arduous years.
Yes.
Are they dead yet?
Almost, you know. They're still twitching.
We have
twitching.
One here from Dr. Chris Brown, who still writes for us, actually. This is from the same issue. A Linux sysadmin called Pete typed all his commands with his feet. After RM-R, his toe hit a star. Now he's selling bananas in Crete.
That's brilliant.
Yeah.
That was
so for next time, we need a new challenge. Any ideas?
I won't be here, so.
Oh, yeah, Mike's going away.
I'm going away.
We'll be down to two of us.
A long time.
Andrew, what do you think? Cavalesque.
Yeah, good luck, folks.
You can do one by proxy, by email.
Oh, yeah.
By text message.
Something to do with the command line, Paul.
Something short enough to fit in text message.
That's a good idea, because we need to read it out.
So SIM card.
How about we all come up with the most smart, clever, innovative command line we possibly can that does something unique and original. There has to be at least 50 characters.
What a good idea.
50 characters.
Semicolons allowed.
Yep, semicolons allowed. You know, pipes. Oh, you like
hash characters redirect. For comments?
No, none of that. No.
LS hash dot 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 dot.
Can't do random.
No. Yes. So at least 50 characters. Good luck, Andrew. And Mike won't be here. Hooray!
I'll be here in spirit, listeners.
And with such, where the hell is Andrew? We come to the halfway point of our podcast, at which point we still have to go our discovery of the fortnight. Plus our open ballot, are we in this for freedom or function? And don't forget, of course, our hot seat, which is still to come up and very interesting.
Hot seat.
Right, moving on. Discovery of the week, fortnight, 14 days. You know the score. I'm going to kick off this one. I came across a game on Happy Penguin the other day. It was a commercial game that's just been open sourced.
Brain Party.
Lugaru.
I bought that.
Lugaru?
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Did you play it?
In the indie games pack. No, I didn't play it. I just wanted to sponsor money to the behalf of Linux users.
Oh, right. I didn't realise that, because I went and grabbed it straight away. And of course, I didn't read any instructions, so I just went straight into the game, and I found myself as a rabbit on top of some snowy mountain.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
So I started
game.
Walking around, and all these rabbits came and started beating the crap out of me. And I didn't know what to do. It was just rabbits just braying me all the time.
Sounds ace.
Yeah, well, I then actually decided there's actually a very helpful tutorial mode for this as well. So I actually loaded that, and it turns out it's a kind of 3D beat-em-up game.
With rabbits?
With rabbits, but you're very agile. you can perform lots of different moves and flips and jumps and stuff. So it was actually quite entertaining once I worked that out. But just goes to show, always read the manual, because otherwise you can have some very scary moments.
So the open source version is everything? All the assets, all the source code?
Well, I'm not. They've only just announced that they're open sourcing it, so right. That might just be the code, that might just be the engine.
There were a few good open source games out of that project.
Yeah.
There's one which includes a massive level builder as well.
Well, I know at Penumbra, they released all the source code. I know they haven't released the assets, but one of the great things that we liked about the game when we reviewed it was their very clever physics engine. So it would be great if somebody could pull that into something else.
Mm. All right then. Paul?
I've got two. Okay. One thanks to Louis Bougeard, who emails regularly, thankfully. He has very kindly produced a Tux Radar Chrome extension, which is neat. It lists the latest news from the site. So
right.
And he shared it. It's open source. You can go ahead and download it. The URL is obscenely long, so I'm just going to say it's a URL. It will be in our podcast notes, and you can download it, and you can snag the source code from his website and try it yourself. It's just a nice way of reading Tux Radar to wade through the huge number of adverts we have on our website. And the second one is an awesome picture, which I can only show the people here. And I have to link to it on the website. And
on your Dell Slate?
Yeah, my Dell Slate. my Dell Streak, you mean?
Sorry, that's it.
I've shown a team here, and I can show it to the microphone, but you won't really appreciate it, so I'll have to link to it. The title is, Wow, This Is Almost Exactly Like a Dream I Had, You Had to Be There. That's the name of the picture. And the picture is that. It's one of the most obscenely weird pictures I've ever seen.
Who came up with that idea?
I have no idea.
That's Hitler coming down a rainbow on a doormat.
On a magic flying carpet.
On a magic flying carpet in space.
So if you think your dreams are weird, it could be much, much weirder.
Oh, it could be that guy out of the Sparks who used to play the keyboard.
Oh, yes, you're right.
He looks actually like that.
Yes, you're right. Go.
Decide for yourself. Is it Hitler or the Sparks? On our podcast notes.
In fact, he doesn't look that much like Hitler, does he? He's just got the same moustache.
It might just be some guy with a
narrow hairdo. And the greasy hairdo.
Yeah, just like the guy from Sparks. Mike's absolutely right.
Okay, go ahead.
You know things have been tight when Mike has resorted to a game, and I've resorted to something music-related, which is it's actually a reverb plugin. Now, reverb is one of the most essential kinds of effects plugins you can have when it comes to sound, and open source is very poorly catered for when it comes to reverb. There's only one semi-reasonable open source implementation, and that's called Freeverb. But now there's two, thanks to a guy called Martin Eastwood, who has released the source code to his really excellent mVerb plugin, and also created a Linux version that you can install as a LadSpar or as a VST plugin. And it's much better than Freeverb. In fact, it's the best I've heard, the best open source reverb plugin, which means if you create music, it's great. Some people like to put reverb on their radio streams. What's clever about it is apparently it uses DeToro's figure of eight reverb structure.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm reading this, which is a bank of all pass filters used to smear the phase, followed by a loop of multi-tap delay lines that feed back into themselves to create echoes.
That's how I would have done it.
Yeah, and he's added another multi-tap delay for pre-delay.
Must be very realistic, though.
It sounds musical. It works well. And thanks, Martin, for releasing it.
Has this guy just like come up with it out of the blue then, or was it a previous commercial program?
These reverb plugins are very proprietary. They're closely guarded because some plugins sell for thousands of pounds.
Really?
So there's very little documented information of how they work or how other manufacturers implement them. So Martin's one of them. There are people who work through what they can to try and recreate these acoustically. A lot of new ones use convolution, but it's low CPU as well.
Great.
So that's it.
And what's your discovery, Andrew? Well, perhaps it's that the podcast recording was at 11 o'clock rather than 2 o'clock.
We can't even blame the football, can we?
No. We can try. Right.
It's hot seat time.
Whoa.
Who's in the hot seat this time?
Isn't it?
It's Andrew.
That
isn't
guy
it?
That you are.
did we decide? Oh no, we've got to spin the wheel of misfortune that we don't have anymore.
Well, we flogged it off, didn't we? Somebody said in the comments that they bought it. I can't remember.
Yeah, that was funny.
Yeah. Well, they didn't put much of a bid in. That was a problem.
We could douse it.
In what? Petrol?
That's a good idea. Yes, yes. Do you happen to have a dowsing rod?
I do, actually.
Well, amazing. Well, there it is. Let me just quickly scribble out on this table here a few things. Okay. We've got what? KDE, Grub, Qt, what else we've got? Bash, GIMP. There's a few other things.
Okay.
Well, Graham, why don't you, as it's your turn.
Okay, I'll hold it in both hands like this.
Yes.
All right. Silence. It's moving down. It's moving down. It's hit the table on flash.
Oh, I thought it was Grub for a second. Though. Sorry. Just where I was sitting, I thought it was Grub. Flash. That's not free software.
That's true. Ganache.
Ganache. Can you talk about Flash, Ganache, SWF deck?
God, I know absolutely nothing about Ganache. Or right, Flash.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting minute then. Flash was a very fast superhero.
Okay.
Go ahead, you've got...
I need a timer.
You've got 1 minute to save the Earth, Flash.
Okay, all right.
Ready?
Go. Once upon a time, there was a company called Macromedia, who used to make rather interesting software. I used to use their Director application to create interactive web pages. But they came up with a better idea, and this was Flash, which was some kind of scripting language to create interaction and vector graphics on your display, much like Fantavision on the Amiga, which was a really cool tool.
Tangent!
Flash was really useful at the time because you couldn't do anything very clever with the internet back then, and it meant people could play games and do all kinds of cool stuff, and it evolved into a movie playback thing, and in fact evolved into its own operating system, which doesn't work very well on Linux. Flash is a terrible piece of software now. It has, even though they totally rewrote the code for the last version, it doesn't seem to have improved Linux performance. There isn't even a 64-bit version of 10.1. It's just going to get worse. I actually totally agree with Steve Jobs, which is probably the only thing I totally agree with Steve Jobs on. Flash is an aberration and shouldn't be involved with the internet, and that everybody should get rid of it and move to HTML5 for video, which would be much better, and the BBC should especially do that, even though they're going to completely ignore that and stick with their own proprietary form.
Very good.
I heartily agree with that.
Very good.
Very yes. Passionate, very well delivered.
Yes. Well done. It's me next time, so listeners, please go ahead and post your hot seat ideas. We will try and find a replacement for the dowsing rod, something a bit more audible. please go ahead and post your comments or suggestions, things you'd like to talk me to talk about for a full minute to our podcast comments.
Okay, following that rant, it's now time for Open Ballot, which is never a rant at all. this episode we asked yesterday, in fact, whether you use open source software primarily because of the freedom it offers, the freedom to tinker around with the code and for other people to tinker around with the code and redistribute it, or because of the functionality it offers, because it's better than the alternatives. And I'm happy to say we had lots of responses, although I haven't counted them, but I think most of them are on the freedom of the freedom variety.
Ooh.
Freedom within functionality, and we do accept that most people are going to choose a combination for the both. But Harris Eldon, that's all one word. I don't know whether that's Harris Eldon. It's by far the functionality of free software that I like the most. I like the functionality. It fits my way of working rather than the way I'm forced to by a manufacturer. For example, I get this podcast using MashPodder and wrote a script to copy the files to my portable device. For me, a podcast client should run without me even thinking about it. It does not need to be a GUI. I think that's great. I mean, he's actually empowered by free software and he's been able to create his own solution. So that was actually for freedom. That's not for functionality. Dilbert Dave says, because I choose to. I like the fact that I can find applications that will fit my needs without having to shell out my hard-earned cash up front. Being able to feed back to the developers with bugs and feature requests when you know that your voice is not going to be lost in a might of corporation is also appealing. Toby says, freedom, but I use open source software because I believe in the idea of free software. I do believe that the progress would be much faster if all projects were open sourced. However, I have no problems using programs like Skype or Dropbox for their functionality. I guess I'm just a hypocrite. Well, I don't think that makes him a hypocrite.
I'm not sure if necessarily all programs would progress quicker if they were open sourced.
No.
I mean, that's all about the development methodologies, isn't it? And the team, you know, some things work really well being free software open source. Some things, everybody just start arguing, you know, about the colour of the title bars.
Yeah. And most of us... Nearly everyone I know uses a hybrid of open source and non-open source software on the Linux desktop anyway. It's a reality.
When I ran my virtual Richard Matthew Stallman program, as discussed a few podcasts ago, I only said like 0.3% of my desktop was closed.
Yeah. Well, you're perhaps the exception. Well, no, I mean, to be fair, I don't suppose I do. There's NVIDIA and not really Flash. I haven't even installed Flash these days. I think, in the original question... it mentioned price, and in a price per, if you're comparing free software against other free software and other closed systems, I think open source free software is a lot more functional for the zero cost, whereas zero cost applications that aren't open source, maybe shareware on another platform, are usually incredibly crippled. So there's no contest. When we start talking about the GIMP competing with Photoshop, then we have problems. Because the GIMP obviously can't compete with Photoshop, but at the same time, it's totally free, and it's not £600 or whatever Photoshop costs. And of course, you have the freedom to do what you want with it.
I take a very pragmatic view on free software. I just released a new iPad game. You know, I've got an iPad, I've got an iPhone. you know, you can buy them on your iPad game. It's great. It's called Mancala HD. And it's only for iPad. I'm not going to release it in the next version because it uses the iPad GUI and it would require rewriting. I may release the source code because I release all my source code as GPL3. But, you know, I don't feel the need to force other folks to do so. And, you know, I've got an Xbox. I've got a PS3. I've got a Wii. I don't mind buying closed software systems. And at the same time, I love the fact that when I do use Linux to do free software programming, it's really, really nice. So my functionality is quite niche. I know it's niche. You know, I love the fact that when I use Python array, I can say, just pull in GTK or pull in GStream or pull in any number of libraries and it'll just work. Whereas on OS X, and I have tried to do OS X programming, it's really, really hard to pull in these kind of libraries. You haven't got a package manager. I know Mike hates packages, but I can just draw upon 5,000 libraries just by typing a command line. I can just pull in so much functionality really, really easily on Linux.
So you're saying it's function? Beautiful. You're saying it's function
for me, it's function. So to confirm, I release all my source code as GPL3. I believe in free software, but yeah. My main priority is functionality. I want things to work. And I said, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, you know, I've been doing a lot of iPhone programming recently for my company, Future. You know, the company that owns Linux Format. And that's going to be closed source forever. It's a future-owned code. You know, they're not going to release it. Why would they? But it's painful. I know it's painful compared to free software programming, which is really, really nice, really, really easy, and really, really fast and clean and clever and cool and stuff. So for me, it is functionality. I love making stuff with free software because there's so much you can make with so little work.
So in a way, you're saying, actually, that freedom is a feature.
Freedom,
it's a function.
Yeah, for me, yeah, sure, exactly, yeah. I release my code. It's important. But my number one priority is it's great fun. I love making stuff on Linux because it's so easy to pull on mentally cool libraries
that do
great stuff with just a few lines of code. And you would struggle to do that on any other platform.
Yeah.
Windows included.
I mean, I have to agree. I think I use and have used Linux because investing my time in learning how to do things, I know isn't going to be wasted when somebody else changes the applications that I'm using, which seems to happen a lot in the proprietary world. I mean,
yeah,
I use Cubase, for example, which is updated expensively almost every 18 months. I can't afford.
They have to, don't they, presumably?
Well, yeah, to keep going, but I can't afford to keep doing that. And also, they force you to relearn things. Now, if I do know Arda quite well, but if I know that time invested in Arda isn't going to be wasted, they're not going to change the way things work for a good reason, not just to sell the next upgrade.
Yeah.
And I like that a lot. That's what I've always liked about Linux.
Well, again, going back to my niche coding perspective, Jeremy Allison wrote a great article previously about how the POSIX learning he picked up 20 years ago still absolutely works for Linux. You know, you can open sockets and write files and do stuff on Linux, whereas on Windows it's changed three or four times.
Yes.
Seven or eight times in that period of time.
Oh, you can still call int 21h on Windows and get some stuff out of it.
They've retired most of the POSIX functions as of Visual Studio 2005.
That's right. I mean, there's the same API going back to DOS days on Windows. You call int 21h
if you call the BIOS, you can do what you like. if you want to call scanf, they'll tell you to go away. That's been removed.
I thought they
were deprecated.
Right, because they put that in, didn't they, to try and get some military contracts or something?
Yeah,
POSIX compliant.
Yeah. So,
well, Martin Greeny broadly agrees with us. He says functionality. I'm finding it's the little things in the OS: centralized updates, windows snapping to each other, and the desktop edge, multiple desktops, drop-down calendar from the clock. I really need these for me to work these days. They're all the things that proprietary programs could have, but just don't seem to, or don't do well. So I suppose it's function. The open source nature is secondary to me, though I know I can rely on FOSS to be more to my liking.
Yeah, when it comes to functionality, I think we're missing some key features still. I mean, Photoshop CS5, right, came out a few months ago, and it does some silly, silly features because they're basically inventing stuff now to solve problems that no one actually has yet, which are very cool. And we could basically ignore things like 3D scale and rotate, or what are they called, puppet warp, or other features added in CS5, and think about features they added 10 years ago, like CMYK support, for example.
Yeah.
It's like Word versus OpenOffice. Word adds incredibly niche features now because you have to keep on adding features to sell new versions or GUI redesigns, whatever you want to do. Whereas OOO has now caught up with the basic level of features that 95% of people actually want, and therefore it's a great replacement. Whereas the GIMP hasn't hit that point yet. It hasn't got color profile support that actually works, which means professionals can't use it very easily. And I think that's it's a problem. The problem is it's boring code to write. No one wants to write this code.
It's a small team, isn't it? Nobody actually wants to work with it.
A small team, yeah, exactly. They want to do stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like, was it Aaron Sago said about KDE or someone that said about KDE? Yeah, I think it was Aaron. Yeah, anyway, he said, I'd love for KDE developers to fix bugs, but they don't want to fix bugs, they want to write new code.
Yeah.
And the truth is, he said, if they weren't writing new code, they'd be doing nothing at all. So we have to accept new code, because it's that or nothing, because they don't want to fix bugs, because fixing bugs is a very boring job.
Well, maybe, you know, if you want to add your features to the main trunk, you have to fix a bug, you know.
That's good, yeah. Quid pro quo.
Pantless Penguin. He said, she said it was cost. I thought it was cost until I started using closed source software. I got a MacBook and OS 10 update broke my Wi-Fi card. It wasn't hard down. The link would just flake out. Yeah. I'm not trying to say Linux is better than OS 10 just because I got a flaky driver. The thing is that I was used to open source software. I could go and hunt the driver developer via email, IRC, or at least talk to someone more knowledgeable than myself, diagnose and fix it within a reasonable amount of time. With OS 10, I filed a bug, I called support, I wasted a couple of hours talking to a genius, I basically exhausted my avenues and didn't get a result. When the fix was released, Apple never followed up on my tickets either. We've never had to pay for support at all with Linux, or even have to worry about it expiring. That's the thing with Apple hardware. You know, the Mac Care, you're kind of left on your own. I mean, I know Apple are pretty good and responsive, but with Microsoft, you're totally lost.
Yeah, with at least Apple, you can go and harass someone in a store. Obviously, it didn't work out in this particular Pantless Penguin case.
Yeah, yeah.
With MS, you are indeed lost. You're basically boned.
Where was my favourite? It was from Hugh. Did you see that one? Oh, yes. Hugh, nothing to say except I have a man crush on all four of you.
But there's only three of us here.
So one of us gets double man crush.
That could be you, Mike.
And my lipstick on.
But Mike's poor little frame might just snap. So what are we saying? What are you saying? Functionality or freedom?
I'm saying functionality, but I do think freedom is a part of that function. I know it was always going to be mixed. Yeah, yeah. I know. I think we're agreeing.
Okay.
Because
whoa!
It's not the zealousness of the freedom I'm interested in. I'm interested in the freedom because it brings a function to the operating system that I find an advantage.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe we're taking freedom for granted. If freedom wasn't there, it would be upsetting, wouldn't it?
Of course.
Exactly. So we don't even read licenses anymore because you don't read licenses. They just exist. It's GPL3 or BSD or Apache or whatever. You don't worry about it. So maybe actually we're taking it all for granted now.
Yeah.
And just building on the shoulders of giants all the time.
I mean, if you happen to find yourself on a Windows desktop and you want to find a simple tool such as an MP3 tag editor, you know, you can't find one that's free for love nor money. In fact, the best free applications on something like Windows are usually GNOME-based or open-source Motif-based applications that have been ported.
Yeah, you have to get the GTK licenses.
Yeah, they just don't have the same... And that's totally alien to me these days. You know, so yes, that kind of freedom is a massive feature, maybe even the biggest feature of open source software.
Yes, so I agree. Mike, what do you think?
I'm very much a pragmatist as well. The most important thing is that software works and is functional and is usable. If it's free as well, then that's a great benefit. But I think one thing leads to another as well. I don't think, you know, they just have like two different philosophies that happen to bump into one another.
Oh, is it Andrew? Yay! Andrew has just arrived.
You can now tell us what you think's better.
No, you can't. So you're a pragmatist as well, is what you're saying.
Yeah, basically. I mean, you know, freedom does help to improve functionality anyway when anybody can contribute. So one thing leads to another. So I wouldn't go out my way to use something, you know, the herd rather than a proprietary system, you know, just as the herd's free.
More free.
I think
more
that's good. I think that's really strong. I think that means we're all using Linux because it's better. It's not just because of some
although
belief.
I would say there is one nagging problem I have with free software, and that is that it seems rather than having someone go in, make a project, finish it, release it, do something else, there seems to be this lifelong chain they have to their project where they just keep on releasing version 1.1, version 1.2. For example, Frozen Bubble still has releases.
You know, really?
This game is finished, guys. Move on.
Well, they had different coloured balls.
As a result, new graphics. Hmm? Yeah, I know. So as a result, rather than having a wide range of games, you know, like in the App Store for iPhone, you've got 225,000 apps, of which most are fart apps, but you have a variety of apps. Rather than having a variety of apps, you end up with a few very highly polished apps but not that selection. So I think that's a bit of a shame.
Right, well, we've run out of time. So thanks.
And with that, we come to the end of our podcast. I'll let Andrew do the rest. It doesn't feel like he's wasted his time coming here. You remember what I normally say, don't you?
Subscribe on some website or other.
Yeah, but you've got, I have to interrupt you for my one more.
How
thing.
Unexpected!
Yeah. Well, it's once again it's time for you to prove your geekiness with some more questions. I want you to tell me the year in which these Linux kernels were released. 1.0.
94.
No, it's 10 years ago almost.
So correct. Andrew's right. 1.0 was released in 94.
94, okay, fair enough.
2.0.
99?
Nope.
95.
Closer.
97.
96. 2.2.
99.
Yep.
2.4.
2004. No.
2002. 2001. I think it's 2.6.
And 2.6 was...
2004?
2004,
nope, 2003. Oh. 2003
ourselves.
So nearly there, anyway.
Good. So we actually have no clue, basically.
It seems to be 2.6 for so long.
Yeah, well, it does now, isn't it? Yeah.
No, I remember writing an opinion column for the Linux format back in 2004, saying the new kernel is out, I'm going to upgrade. And it was obviously hilarious because I was using Debian and I was going to upgrade from 2.2 to 2.4. That was a big thing. I didn't see any reason to actually use 2.6 at the time. And 2.4 just became available. And with that, Andrew?
And with that, it's time to say goodbye. Goodbye.
Good enough. Subscribe. So pay us money, please. Help.
Just help us, please.
And Mike's going to be away, aren't you, Mike?
I'm going away. You're going to have three podcasts without me. So
three podcasts.
Who are you having to stand in? That guy.
No, I honestly believe we've got all these outtakes of you saying "really" and stuff. We could just dub them in at the right points.
In fact,
can we try it once?
We shouldn't have told.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, exactly. Told, isn't it? See how long it takes them to realise you're not actually here. Yes. A long time, I sadly fear. And with that, we come to the end of our podcast. Please subscribe online, and we will see you in 2 weeks. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.
It's such a nice day to be on the main stage, all class skipping.